During your internet browsing or weekly podcast downloading binge, you have stumbled upon Hot Air, the DC Breeze's podcast. My name is Greg Esser. I am the host of that podcast. I've got a long episode in store for you today. It is with Glenn Poole. Glenn Poole already did one podcast with me this year. He's back again. Lucky to have him, of course, former DC Breeze captain, former DC Breeze player. This year he spent most of the time behind the microphone with me, either at games or, as I mentioned once before, on Hot Air, and today again on Hot Air. Just to get some of the stuff out of the way up front, some of the logistics and everything else, formalities, if you will, I'd like to give a big thanks. It's the end of the Breeze season, but I'd like to give a thanks to everyone that appeared on Hot Air this year. I had an all-star cast all throughout the season. Keegan of the New York Empire appeared on the podcast. I had Markham Schaffner, I had Alan Kolick, I had Libby Chamberlain, Rome McDonald, Peter Pryle, John Neely, as well as John Agin. So big thanks to all those guys and gals for coming out and appearing on Hot Air. I also wanted to give everyone a little update about what's in store for the off-season for Hot Air. I tried to do it every other week throughout the course of the season. That ambitious schedule gets scaled back during the off-season. It may be once a month, every other month. Make sure to subscribe. Keep us updated on your iTunes. And as new episodes come out, if you are subscribed, they will automatically download. Of course, pay attention to Twitter at TheDCBreeze. Everything will come out there. Tweet at me, TheGregEsser, if you're looking for updates as well about podcasts as they come out in the off-season. I think we're going to have lots of exciting signings this off-season as the Breeze continue to grow off of a very successful 2016. I already know that there is lots in the works for the media as well. Those details should be coming out throughout the course of the season, talking with some local affiliates about some more coverage. In fact, just yesterday, there was a article that came out on ABC7, the ABC affiliate, local affiliate in Washington, D.C. And so article there to be checked out, video there to be checked out. Very cool stuff. Last thing I will say before I kick it to Broke Royals to do our entry music is that for any of you folks that are in Washington, D.C., Monday, August 8th, D.C. Scandal Premier Club Amateur Women's Team will take on the All-Star Tour. That game happens at a high school in Rockville, Maryland. Be sure to come out. I'm going to be announcing it on the live stream as well, so you can tune in that way. The partnership between the Breeze and Scandal, while informal, has been a strong one. Guesquier, of course, the coach of both teams, and I'm very happy to also join in that partnership and help out both teams with Scandal and the Breeze. So, all that out of the way, sorry, 3 minutes up front, took a little longer than I wanted to, kicking it over to Broke Royals and on to an interview, a chat, stat-heavy chat, postseason chat with none other than Glenn Poole. So it is lovely to bring this season full circle and be back sitting here with you, Glenn. Thank you for recording another episode of Hot Air, the second episode of the year you were with me. You're back to close down the 2016 season. How do you feel today?
Always happy to be here, Greg.
Perfect. I know maybe actually, do you need any vocal warm-ups or anything? Like the bacon ate her?
Me.
Ooh, you're just going to do a cappella for us. Perfect. So that out of the way, the first thing on our agenda today is to talk about the thrilling but brutal, the exciting but ultimate letdown last weekend in Toronto. The Breeze went up there. They had the final round of the playoffs for the Eastern Division. They took it to overtime, but they couldn't pull out the W. Any kind of broad thoughts about this game? I mean, other than the heartbreak we're experiencing here back in the nation's capital?
I mean, it gave me a lot of empathy for the New York fans this year, I'll tell you that.
Sure. They were sent home a week earlier by the hometown heroes.
Yeah, I mean, great game, very physical game, very contentious toward the end. A lot of bids, a lot of crazy plays, really exciting to watch. I hope everyone on the air right now got to see it.
Yeah, it's all up online, so it can be viewed on YouTube. I'll let folks form their own opinion. I think you're absolutely right, though. There were some really physical plays that have the kind of whole community abuzz as AltiWorld came out with an article last week talking about the increase of physicality, or at least the increase with which the video of it is available, I think is an interesting debate. But there was a huge play, a 60, 80-yard pass into the end zone. Schaffner posted up to make the catch and run over by Powell. And Powell will be serving a suspension, not able to play in the first game of this weekend's championship Final Four.
That's right. I mean, we don't need to go down the rabbit hole of the whole question whether bad bids are increasing in frequency in Ultimate. But I think suffice to say that it was a physical game, you know, a lot of passion from both sides, and you know, definitely disappointed to see the season come to a close for the Breeze, but you gotta feel like it was a great success of a season overall, getting to that playoff game, sweeping New York throughout the season, just a really great performance from the Breeze from the start.
Yeah, I like that you're changing the conversation to be on those positives, because it is the first time the Breeze have ever won a playoff game in franchise history. It's the first time they've ever hosted a playoff game in franchise history. Maybe two things that are related. As you and I both know, the difficulty it is to win on the road and bring a full roster and bring a full rested roster as you're traveling around these 6-8 hour bus rides and that sort of thing. So there are a lot of positives to take away in that, and then a 10-4 record to boot.
Yeah, I mean, good season overall, I think. I think DC fans can be proud of the performance that the Breeze put together this year. Really looking forward to talking about, maybe close to the end of the podcast, what the season in the future looks like.
Yeah, I think that's right. So that type of stuff out of the way, I want to also have kind of like a summary show, if you will, talk through some of the statistics, some of the grand themes, the takeaways, the trends, the headlines, as we see them up close and personal here. And so the first thing I'll throw to you is kind of that season overview. You want to talk to me about kind of how you saw the trend of the 2016 Breeze? You saw the games up close and personal at the beginning of the season. You saw them at the end. What talk to me about the gap, the difference.
Well, what comes to mind, first of all, is that the Breeze early on, I would say, didn't quite have all of their line calling, their offensive and defensive rotations locked down. And I think that's just naturally
kind a lot of fluidity.
A good strategy even in some ways for the coach Geschieri to be playing around with the new toys, as it were. All the new guys on the roster, seeing whether they were more effective on offense or defense.
Half this team was turnover.
That's right. And so I think as those things started to come into a more set rotation, we also saw the team executing on offense a little bit closer to, I think, what the coaching staff was hoping for. That you always want to have that kind of progression from the early part of the season where you're trying things out and everyone's getting familiar with each other and with the offense and the defensive schemes. And then closer to the end, you want to be dialed in that playoff mindset.
Yeah. I mean, I think you're right. I think they dialed in more. I think some of the roles became more regular. You saw certainly the handling core around the O and the D line stabilize a little bit. I think also the Breeze played the Phoenix a lot at the end of the season. And it's easy to start mistaking, you know, two or three games against the Phoenix that are very, that were, you know, clearly in a rebuilding area this season. It might be easy to mistake those 8-point wins as the Breeze are really clicking.
Sure, I'm thinking a little bit less of the scores of those games or the win-loss column and more about just what the product on the field looked like. I thought personally that the offense looked a little out of sorts at times early on in the season. I remember being up in the booth and seeing the movement back and forth and players looking like they weren't quite sure where they were supposed to be looking for the continuation. And, you know, toward the end of the season, players looked more confident in their roles. I think, you know, that's just something that's naturally going to happen throughout a season. But I think that it also can be attributed to, you know, the coaching staff really getting out of the players as time went on what they were looking for.
Makes a lot of sense. And to your point of you know, can even if beyond to my point of wins and losses, and to your point of you saw these tangible evidence within games of the team getting better. You know, they did slowly build. They closed the gap with the Rush. They won a historic game that the Rush haven't lost against an American team in the Eastern Division since the inception of the AUDL. So you're right in the sense that even some of those intangibles or those things that you observed added up to point differentials. That might have been kind of my takeaway.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to talk about this season without really identifying that home win against Toronto as a turning point for the franchise in some ways. I mean, you know, obviously we can't tell the future, but I think that if we continue to see success in DC, I think that that first win against Toronto is going to be a big part of that narrative.
What do you make of another historic feat for the Breeze franchise, which is a season sweep of the Empire?
I mean, that was really impressive to me. The Empire played exceptionally well down the stretch, I think, in each game that they played against DC, particularly the two games that were in the nation's capital. New York got down early in both games and made comebacks that were, I thought, impressive.
Yeah.
You know, they had a lot of guys flying around making plays, lots of contact in those games as well. Certainly a lot of fight from the New York squad. And, you know, even a couple players added to their roster at the end of the season.
Right, New York's become quite famous for those mid-season pickups.
Yeah, and those players were difference makers, I can tell you. You know, just having seen them grow throughout their college careers, but also, you know, they stepped onto the field for New York and they started contributing with tangible numbers right away.
Yeah, this is Jeff Babbitt and John Wodatch, of course.
That's right. And so they stepped right into big roles for New York. And, you know, even with those midseason pickups, the Breeze continued to, you know, control the games. You know, even when they had their backs to the wall or had the pressure on them late on, you know, when there was double overtime and things like that, Breeze were able to pull it out.
Yeah. Talk to me a little bit about some of the, you know, on a more individual player basis. We saw players that struggled with injuries in 2015, come back to some very successful seasons in 2016, and we saw the inverse of that. We saw guys that we've historically witnessed maybe in other playing situations, very healthy, have some struggles on the field this year. Are there any of those guys that you want to kind of call attention to and kind of give the, you know, weave them into the plot line of the 2016 Breeze?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you're setting me up to spike this one here, talking about AJ Jokoski, and yeah. I was really glad to see him not only retake the field in 2016, but also step into a fairly significant role for the Breeze this year, even given the high influx of really top talent in DC. AJ was still top half of the team in points played. He was top half in plus-minus. He was also top half in passing percentage. Just like a really solid contributor for the Breeze this year, and I'd love to see that as a former teammate.
Yeah, it's interesting that you say that too, because I think a lot of, you know, we talk about like the strength regimens and kind of the way that the sports fitness is changing around Ultimate, as evidenced by the Moral Performance Group, and AJ's, you know, always been the strength coach in addition to his playing role for the Breeze. But the point I want to make here is a lot of that conditioning is for your individual performance on a daily basis, but a lot of that conditioning is so you bounce back more.
That's right. Yeah.
And so to see a guy that is striving for that dimension of the game, excel at that dimension of the game, it is fun.
Absolutely. I mean, his injury last year was not really sort of a lack of training. It would seem more like a freak injury or a, you know, an unfortunate accident, as it were, like with his ankle injury, not a muscle or conditioning issue.
Yeah.
And this year, you know, he's able to bounce back from that, you know, step into a big role, like I said, and he played well.
Yeah. The other side of the coin that I think warrants being brought up, it'll be interesting to see if he can make a similar comeback player of the year, if you will, and if you want to give that award to AJ, I think that's a worthy candidate. But Nate Castien this year struggled with some injuries, and also in his ankle and his foot, I believe.
Yeah, that
started out the season really strong.
I think that was pretty disappointing for DC fans. They would have really liked to see a player of his caliber see the field more. It was tough. He was injured in a couple different ways throughout the season, and you know, it kept him out of Worlds tryouts, which I think he was invited to but couldn't participate. And then, yeah, he wasn't able to play a lot of games for the Breeze, and he's definitely the kind of player who could have maybe helped in that game against Toronto, for instance, if he were healthy.
Yeah. Well, hopefully a productive offseason for Castien could really be a difference maker for the Breeze next year.
And he's another trainer himself, so I'm sure that he's, you know, on top of his rehab.
Well, that's good to hear, certainly.
Quick shout-out to Ben Fang. He was another player that struggled a little bit this year, didn't see the field a lot, and I'm hoping that he's able to make a comeback as well. He's one of the players that got signed for a multi-year contract, so we'll expect to see him back in the lineup.
Yeah, that's right. His playing time not high in 2016, but another hopeful for what he can impact for the Breeze in 17. I want to take this portion of the podcast. I want to talk through some of the stats. It's something we kind of always pay attention to. They're always online and available at altianalytics.com, which is, I think, one of the cooler features of what the AUDL is doing for the sport of Ultimate. I'm going to talk through some top five lists, and if I could have you, Glenn, kind of react to, you know, maybe the biggest surprise on each list. And we'll chat about that player individually. I think, you know, we could have went into the season knowing guys' track records in the league, knowing guys' track records amateur outside of the AUDL. We could have predicted a lot of these. But I think on each one of these lists, there's one or two names that really jump out to me to say, you know, wow, a model of consistency and a model of excellence that I might not have fully saw coming.
Sure. Yeah, let's go for it.
So let's start with the assists, and then we'll do the goals, the blocks, and we'll roll it up to the plus minus level.
Yeah, typically assists come before goals.
Perfect. So assists on top of the list was Schaffner with 38 assists. Wodach had 37. Nicky Spiva, 33, Kerrigan at 30, and Kolick at 28. Those are the top five for assists this year.
Yeah, so in terms of surprises on this list, I mean, all of these players have been really consistent contributors for the Breeze this year. I would say that, you know, Schaffner in particular is known as a handler. He's got those big hucks, so, you know, we're not surprised to see him
score from anywhere on the field.
Yeah, we're not surprised to see him topping the assist category. Wodach is often the recipient of those hucks, so, you know, he might get stuck outside, just outside the end zone, be dishing it off for and that's how he'll be getting some of those assists. Spiva is another guy all over the field, you know, sort of not really a surprise to me, except
here's the shocking thing about Spiva. Is he played 255 odd points this year. 203 of them came on the D line. So, you know, so compared to, like, you know, mainstays on the O line, split time were shot with Schaffner, but certainly Wodach and Kerrigan and Kolick, all O line guys in 2016. Impressive that he put up 33 on the other side of the disc.
Yeah, totally agree. And then, you know, Kolick also played a lot of defense, especially early on in the season.
That's right.
And so, you know, he's another one up there who's making a lot of those break goals happen, or, you know, with his assists and his throwing ability.
We promised we'd talk about only one, but in the spirit of talking about all five and extending the length of this podcast to all of your enjoyment, sitting at home or driving in your cars, is Matt Kerrigan is kind of a surprise here too, right? He's a guy that excelled in 2015. And you and I had this exact same conversation at the beginning of the year saying, you know, how's he going to hang with an entirely renovated roster? Is he still going to sit atop this list? And I think we had an over-under little bet. And actually, I might need to drop and do my burpees right now because I think I said he was going to do under 20 goals in 2016. And here he sits at 30 assists. We haven't even talked about goals yet. And spoiler alert, he's up there in goals too.
Yeah, you can tell me you're surprised if you want, but I saw him play last year, and I could not be less surprised. The kid is legit. I mean, we saw him jumping over 2-3 defenders at a time last year. He was a rock of consistency on the offensive line. You know, I think he was right up there with Nico Lake as one of the most consistent handlers on the team, even though he was a cutter downfield, had a lot of touches. And this year, same story. You know, he filled in right away. Well, maybe not right away. I think early on he is sort of a secondary or tertiary cutter.
Yeah.
But as the season went on, he was right up there with Wodach as the one of the main targets for the Breeze.
Main targets, and I think the growth that I saw is, you know, playing with a lot of new guys, he gets the undercut. Beginning of the season, he's looking to give it back a little bit. And now we see these assists ballooning up to 30 on the season. You know, I think he gained a lot more confidence to turn upfield and take the look himself.
Yeah, we saw some big flick hucks out of him this year, a couple hammer goals.
Sure.
I mean, he was making throws that we definitely did not see at the same rate last year.
So the goals list looks like this. Wodach, 45. Kerrigan, number 2, at 27. Big drop off there. You've got McDonald sitting at 25. Chuck Cantone at 25 as well. And Kolick rounding out the top five at 23 goals over the course of the season. Any surprises you see there?
I mean, Cantone, maybe not quite as familiar to some of the DC area players. He was certainly a member of the league before, and you know, known as a
played for
as
the Royale.
A, yeah, as a downfield threat. So he's not really a surprise. I would say that, you know, again, like I said, Kerrigan, not surprising me at all. The number of goals he had this year, Kolek, I think, did particularly well as a cutter. When he's normally known as a handler, he was able to stretch it downfield and create some things happening in the end zone, and I think that was impressive to me. Not surprising, but impressive.
And under, if we said that, or if I said at least, I won't put words in your mouth, that Spiva, impressive for putting those assists up on D-line, McDonald's a story here for also playing 80% of his points on D-line and still putting up those 25 goals.
Yeah, I'm also pretty sure that he was up there in Ds. He was very important to the DC Breeze D-line this year. Played, yeah, primarily defense all throughout the season and was a big contributor, not just for the actual counting numbers, but also just his fiery presence. You know, the team really rallied behind him when they needed him to make things happen on the field in close games. He was always there to do it.
I'll jump right to the chase for you. Let's talk about blocks. Number one, it is, in fact, Matt McDonald. Number two, Spiva, one below him at 21. Cantone's got 17. Marshall's got 15. And Schaffner rounds out that top five with 13. Thoughts there?
Yeah, I mean, I like to see Markham getting involved with the Ds. He's a springy player, mostly known for his offensive prowess, though. So it's nice to see him contributing with some blocks.
Sure.
I would say it's a little bit surprising to me for a name that's not on this list, actually. I would have expected Brad Scott, based on his performance last year, to be racking up the blocks as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough competition out there. I wouldn't have been shocked to see Brad Scott on here. I wouldn't have been shocked to see Cranston on here. Two guys that definitely had their big moments this year, and some of those goals were either scorekeeper. Sorry, some of those blocks were either scorekeeper. I might have double credited them because they came at big moments in the game. But just by the counting stats, falling a little bit outside the top five.
True. I remember some hand blocks, particularly from Brad Scott early on, that really created the momentum swings for them to win some of those close games.
And a quick word to the McDonald. You kind of mentioned him, leading him into our blocks conversation here. I think there's a rodeo style. You're almost doing a 180 or a 360 in the air to sky someone that I will forever attribute to the 2016 and to Rowan McDonald, because again and again I watch him go up in a pack of guys, catch the disc with just two fingers as he's spinning around, and I don't know if that extra torque is what elevates him to new heights, but it is impressive to watch.
Definitely. Yeah, he's just an incredible athlete. Do want to make sure that we acknowledge that the defense of this team is not just about blocks. I think, you know, a name that you just mentioned with David Cranston, he's important to that defensive unit because he's the kind of guy who's going to lock down on the other team's best cutter, the other team's best player, and really take him out of the game. And that's important because even if it doesn't get thrown to that guy, you're a big part of the defense.
Yeah, maybe every couple of stalls you say, hey, that's because Cranston's guys got shut down.
And we saw a lot of stalls that the DC Breeze were able to force this year. Even against New York and Toronto, the other two teams at the top
of the
league.
Cream of the crop.
Yeah, they were able to pressure them into what has been known in recent years as coverage sacks.
So then let's roll it up. You know, I think there won't be any surprises here, but at least warrants mentioning that plus minus on the year, top of the list, those three numbers combined, or I guess just goals and assists combined, Wodach tops that list. He's 66 plus for the year. Kerrigan, plus 50. Schaffner, one behind at plus 49. McDonald, sitting at plus 47. And Kolek at 42. Given, I think, the things we just said, no big surprises there. Would be hard to surprise us since it's just a matter of arithmetic at this point.
Yeah, but if you want to do some extra arithmetic, I always like looking at plus minus per point.
Oh,
play.
I know you do.
Yeah, I like to see, you know, guys who maybe don't see the same number of points as some of their teammates but are able to make their contributions in the limited playing time they have. So, you know, obviously here you're going to see some of the same names like Kerrigan leading the team at 0.199 plus minus per point played.
Which is doubly impressive. I mean, don't write that kind of player off because not only are they touching the field so frequently, but they're still putting up that number on a per-point basis.
Yeah, absolutely. But then you're also going to see some names like Tom Doy, who, you know, had, you know, how many goals did he have during the year? It was not past 20, but he was making his impact known in the limited time he saw. I think he missed a couple games for, you know, playing with
the United States
World
Team. Right over in London.
Right, but, you know, when he was there, he was on fire. And that's particularly right. In that playoff game against Toronto, he had a big game.
He did, yep. And so to finish out your thought there, topped the per points for the Breeze this year, did Tom Doyle.
Mm-hmm.
Assists, the top three. Only one name here we haven't talked about yet. Schaffner is there. Spiva and Doyle tie for number three. But it's Helton that's in that two spot. And he didn't show up on any of the lists that we mentioned earlier, again, because, you know, a traveling guy didn't play some of those. A guy that was on the U.S. Worlds team didn't attend all those road games up in Canada, but still shows up on a per point for assists.
Yeah, John Goose Helton was definitely one of the big targets for the Breeze downfield, but also would just as easily turn around and launch a big flick or a hammer in the end zone. You saw him out there on basically every end of quarter point that the Breeze played, whether it was on offense or defense.
Yeah.
Yeah, another guy who is definitely making an impact.
That's an evolving element of the ADL game in general, is the ability to score those end of quarter points that are, there's no opportunity for immediate redemption.
Yeah, that's right. And that's one of the ways that, you know, Tom Doyle had his big game, is I think he came down with a goal that enabled the Breeze to tie it up late in the game and force overtime against Toronto.
On the point per point blocks, three names that we've seen already, so guys that are stepping on the field frequently, they're getting blocks frequently, and you know, more power to them. Number one at Spiva, and tying in second, so second and third really, are McDonald and Cantone.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, Cantone, we talked about a little bit earlier, and you mentioned how Matthew McDonald was making those twisting grabs over piles of players. Cantone, I think, is a player who also is able to really extend his reach and time his jumps very well, and that's where he was able to make big plays when, you know, maybe he didn't have quite the size or even positioning sometimes that his opponent did.
I want to move on to some of the throwers. They might not be throwing goals all the time, but they're completing a lot of passes, or they're maybe throwing some turnovers. The top throwaway contestants for the Breeze this year, not a title that people want, but I think one that's still worth mentioning, is Spiva, followed by McDonald, Wodach, Neely, and Schaffner. Some of those guys, again, just expected to perform so frequently that you get some throwaways, they stack up their accounting number to some degree. But on the other side of the coin, completion percentages. This is another number I know you like, because it's not always about getting the guy into the end zone or getting in the end zone yourself. It's about the breakthrough that sets it up. It's about the consistency in the backfield. You know, a guy that last year really excelled in this category, we talked about ages ago, and we'll talk about again right now, is Nico Lake.
I mean, Nico Lake blew me away. Throwing a little Breeze pun for you.
I love it.
Yeah, I mean, he had a bit of a smaller role this year on the team compared to last year. I also know that he missed a couple games. He was finishing out his college season. But definitely a rock, as we've said before. He was over 100 throws, 98% completion rate, basically unmatched by anyone on the team, except for, of course, one of his other college opponents, Kyle Johnson.
Well, Kyle Johnson's a little bit ambitious to put on this list. He did have all of 7 throws in 2016, but every one of those 7 throws found its recipient for a 100% completion rate.
Can't fault the guy. I mean, he made all his passes.
Right. So fine. Every opportunity he had, he succeeded. But I think when I really look at this list, I see maybe slightly lower throwing percentages, but what to me is equally, if not more, impressive because of the volume of throws that they had to make. A guy like Matt Kerrigan sitting at 97% because he threw 240 times. Or even a guy like Jonathan Neely, who sits at 95%, but threw nearly 400 throws over the course of the season.
Yeah, Neely was definitely a center handler who was called on a lot of the time to really keep the disc moving, keep the offense centered and balanced. He was able to be really consistent in that backfield, just resetting the disc whenever the Breeze needed him to, and was very impressed with his overall consistency as a thrower.
As I was digging into the numbers, there's one other thing I wanted to mention here, and I'll throw it to you. I know you've got a spreadsheet up as well, digging into it as the analytical mind that you are. But one kind of interesting takeaway I had was I was just looking at the frequency of throws between players, and so often when Wodach and Kerrigan were the first and second, the primary, the secondary cuts out of the stack, one of them would catch it on the goal line. The next guy has the whole end zone to work with, you know, able to get free, and they find each other with great frequency. There were 77 passes between them, which is more than any other two non-handler players, and 12 of those went for goals. So I just thought that was an interesting little tidbit about, you know, how frequently one of those guys ends up on the edge of the end zone. They find each other, they find the other for a score.
It definitely tells you a lot about how the Breeze were coordinating their offense, and you got to wonder if other teams are going to start taking these analytics in the future to game plan for their opponents. You got to think, you know, especially once you get halfway through the season and you have that data to work with, are you going to start saying, like, hey, I got to not just worry about, you know, the primary handler, but I also have to worry about what happens when the primary cutter gets it and turns to find that secondary cutter? Is there a way that we can sort of play a team defense or change our marking scheme to prevent that continuation throw that worked so often with the Breeze this year?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it'll be interesting to see if and when we get to that point. I'm a big baseball stat head, and so I know, you know, the lefty matchups for a particular batter. Similarly, I might say, hey, when Wodach catches it on the end zone line and he's throwing to Kerrigan, what percentage of the time is Wodach able to get a breakthrough off?
Yeah, and or what parts of the end zone does he complete the most passes? What parts of the end zone does he complete fewer passes? What can you force him to take shots that he's less comfortable with?
Yeah.
You know, like a player who's less comfortable going off their shooting with their left in basketball, for instance. Can you get him to the part of the court or force him to go up in a way that he's not comfortable doing?
It will be interesting to see how that dimension of the sport plays out over the next couple of years of AUDL. So I think that's all the stat stuff I wanted to do, unless you've got something else you want to toss in for me. But I wanted to talk just a little bit about kind of looking forward. You know, what's the future of this franchise look like? 16 has wrapped. It was the most successful season that we've seen the Breeze play. They've got a couple big names signed for at least another year. You know, what are your thoughts going into this offseason? Are there any, you know, must re-signs here? Are there any, I don't know. What are your thoughts for 2017?
So I think that the future of the franchise depends a lot on the recent past. You have to take a look at the players who got signed early on after last season's finish and see, you know, a couple of them got signed for multi-year contracts.
Yep.
So we'll expect to see them back on the field.
Kolek and Schaffner, of course, they'll be playing in 2017.
So they're the first two new additions after last year's team that got added to the roster. And I think that, you know, Kolek was especially known as a marquee player at the time already, and I think it's very nice to see how Schaffner stepped up this year and played a similar role for the Breeze. You know, a lot of playing time, a lot of contributions in the stats, but also just a fiery player who was able to get his teammates on board and, you know, make things happen.
Yeah, I mean, I've watched Schaffner play a lot in some non-AUDL situations, and I've always been impressed that he can hit anywhere on the field, from any spot on the field, and just a thrower. You know, you say a man's man, I'm talking about a thrower's thrower. Find someone in the end zone who knows that there's space, and Markham's going to find it. The dimension that became really apparent to me over the course of the season is that he was also really dangerous downfield. Again and again, streaking from the handler spot, finding that space himself. He's got a team full of throwers, and maybe by knowing those routes so well from hitting them so frequently, he's able to find the space with his legs, and it was impressive time and time again.
And also put himself in a position to be top five in blocks as well. I mean, he was all over the field. And so it's nice to see those two early signings step up for the team this year. You know, I would expect to see players like Kerrigan get signed back because he was just a monster 2 years in a row. Jeff Wodach, I don't see any way that, you know, he's not expected to contribute just as much next year.
Yeah, and the other two names that are also, of course, locked in for the Breeze are Ben Fang and Brad Scott, two guys that signed 3-year contracts at the end of 2014. So hopefully Fang has a bit of a bounce back, and even Brad Scott maybe a little bit of a bounce back. Had a strong early season, but a guy that I expected, as we said at the beginning, to see on the top five of blocks. And maybe a hopeful to be in that list in 2017.
Yeah, and I think he was also dealing with some injury concerns. So, I mean, there's a whole list of players on this roster who, you know, had a significant role. I think the Breeze were very deep this year. And so, you know, I would love to see a lot of these players come back. And also, you know, shout out to some of the guys who have been playing for many years on the Breeze.
Yeah.
I mean, John Pressimone, the only player to play every single season so far for DC.
The face of the franchise. Nope, a beautiful one at that.
Sorry. Oh. Also, Matthew Skunk Reddy.
That's true. Two faces of the franchise. We could make some sort of cool, I'll leave this one in Photoshop, to combine the two of their faces with the Breeze logo and see if we can't make that the official face of the franchise. A half Reddy, half Pressimone.
And then there are a couple other players, you know, like Russ Howd, 3 years in a row, didn't play a lot in 2015 due to some injuries, but definitely had a role this year.
So let me ask you this. The Breeze have been really aggressive about courting out-of-town talent. In 2014, we had some Pittsburgh guys in town. We had Brett Matsuka from North Carolina at the time. A contingency from out-of-town played a major role this year in World's Player Helton, we talked about already. World's Player Matsuka, Bob Liu was around. I don't think you or I have any particular insight into what these guys' off-season plans and what these guys' 2017 plans look like. They're certainly not signed to the Breeze at this point. What do you think the chances are that the DC maintains these guys, and do you think it's a necessity for the way the franchise was built this year?
Those players were all contributors. They're very talented individuals. But I think that we've seen over the past couple years, especially 2015, where the franchise took a turn and started trying to develop more of the talent that's already in DC. And I think we saw that this year as well with how heavily they recruited from the DC Ultimate scene and really built a team around DC homegrown talent.
Yeah.
I mean, Kolek certainly is one of those players. He, you know, grew up in the DC area, played youth in DC, in Arlington, excuse me, which is right outside.
A style to his throws that is emulated on every side of the district.
Yeah, and then you've also got some of the younger players coming out of college, like Nico Lake, Kyle Johnson, Russ Howd.
Max Castle.
Anthony McLean. Like, a lot of players grew up around here and, you know, are getting signed to the Breeze.
Yeah.
And so I would think that, you know, if I were in the driver's seat, I would be really interested in the talent that continues to develop at the youth level. You know, we saw that the YCC team, the Youth Club Championship team, won the championship last year out of DC.
That's right.
And, you know, there's a lot of talent here in DC. I would expect to see the team continue to develop and grow that section.
That's a pipeline that will serve the Breeze well. I think there are some games coming up this weekend that will not involve the Breeze, unfortunately, but should be exciting ones out in Madison, Wisconsin. We've got the Radicals, the hometown team, playing against the Seattle Cascades. On the other side of the bracket, it is the Dallas Roughnecks playing against the Toronto Rush from the Eastern Division. I'm not really in the business here of speculating too much outside the division and the teams that I know so intimately, but I don't know. You want to just at least throw your hat in the ring here, Glenn? How do you think this is going to shape up?
I would love to see the Rush make another run for the championship. I think, you know, they have a good chance against this Dallas team, but the Dallas team is crazy good.
The Dallas team are a brick wall, as far as I'm concerned. They might be able to scale that, but you're not going through it for sure.
People talk about the Yankees and how they've chosen to develop their franchise over the years, and, you know, there are a whole lot of people that choose not to be Yankees fans because of it, and I think that's something you'll see probably at the Final Four weekend, is that, you know, Toronto is going to be, they're going to enjoy the support from crowd members who love to hate the Dallas Roughnecks.
Yeah, that could be a fun dimension to it, to see some Wisconsinites get really up in the grill of some Roughnecks as they support Lloyd and friends and the Rush.
Madison's certainly a lot closer to Canada than they are to Texas.
That's true. Maybe we'll get some Saskatchewans down. Saskatchewanians? I don't know. What do you call one from Saskatchewan?
Ooh, I am not up to date.
I mean, make it up. I think that's more fun.
Saskuchins.
Perfect. A.
I apologize. It's probably not Saskuchins.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it is. okay. So so other side of the bracket. Any quick thoughts about the Madison Seattle matchup?
I mean, I think that I'm gonna fall on the side of the love to hate the Dallas Roughnecks right now. And I'm going to say my pick to win the whole thing is Madison.
The hometown team.
I would love to see the Radicals go in. Home field advantage, just sweep it. They've had a great season, undefeated.
Undefeated.
They looked real strong in the playoff game against Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh, a team with a lot of talented individuals. Madison made them look disorganized.
So I would love to see it. I think I will be positive nearly any outcome of Final Four weekend. There's a lot to like about the storyline about any one of these four teams. But I, gut-wise, pick Seattle to actually knock off that hometown team. I don't think Madison's going to be playing on day two. I think Madison comes from the weakest division. I think Seattle is much more battle-tested. I think we've rarely seen the full Seattle team on the field this year. And, yeah, I'll be interested to see if Seattle can make things happen on Saturday.
I'll be interested to see if it can happen, but I'm still going to be pulling for Madison.
That's all I've got for hot air. I think there will be, hopefully, some off-season episodes as we talk about what's in store for the 17 season. Any re-signings we hear might warrant my meeting with new franchise players. I might get Glenn in here again, too, because he speaks so well and knows all of the things at UDL, knows the stats inside and out. I appreciate with you getting me here today, Glenn.
Don't flatter.
And I gotta. It's half my job is really just empty hot air. So anyhow, thanks for tuning into Hot Air. Follow The Breeze at The DC Breeze and on Twitter. And we'll talk to you again soon. Adios.